You would turn with me to the book of Proverbs, chapter 6, specifically is where we'll be focusing our attention this morning. As a heads up, we're going to continue this study, Lord willing, in the 11 o'clock hour. We'll primarily be focused on the text in Proverbs 6, verses 12 through 19, and this hour, and then we're going to hopefully make some helpful application in the 11 o'clock hour. It's a joy to be with you this morning and to be able to worship God together. It always is. And I'm thankful for your presence. And I hope and pray that this study will be beneficial to you. The text is, I think, very familiar to us, especially as we consider Proverbs 6 and verse 16, where wisdom mentions six things that the Lord hates and seven are an abomination to him, a Hebrew idiom that is bringing our attention to focus on the things that he would enumerate, perhaps adding emphasis to the last, the seventh, but certainly just drawing our attention and focus and emphasizing these particular traits that the Lord does not have fellowship with and despises entirely. I think, though, as we look throughout the pages of the Bible from the beginning to the end, it becomes very obvious that God exposes evil and darkness. He puts light on it, and he does that for us to see it. And it's not always easy to look at. It's very difficult to think about some of the things that we have to experience personally in this life, some of the things that we ourselves have found ourselves guilty of, things that we have struggled with in temptation, and things that have hurt us personally, whether it be by chance or the evil of other men. And so contrary to a lot of the things that skeptics would say to tear down the true religion of God and of Jesus Christ and the Bible as it's portraying truth to us, contrary to what they would say in regard to it being a safe haven for us to escape reality and ignore all the bad things, it actually exposes them. It shows us a consistency, a constancy, a stable standard and foundation of what is right and what is wrong, what is true and what is false, what is evil and what is righteousness. And that's what we see in Proverbs 6, 12 through 19, a vivid depiction of evil. And while it's by no means comprehensive of everything that is evil that a person can do, it certainly highlights some of the worst things. But I think it's sobering because some of those things that God says he hates and are even further than that, an abomination to him, are things that I feel like as a society and even as people of God, sometimes we discount and minimize. They're not as bad as what God shows them to be. But I think what's interesting to me is in verse 12 of chapter 6 of Proverbs, he mentions a worthless person and a wicked man acts in these ways. And so while one person may be guilty of various things that are mentioned in this text, the verses 12 through 19, right here, wisdom is describing one man, and all of these form a unit. They're descriptive of a very evil character, of a character bent on rebellion against God, opposing him, and because of that, destroying others. This revelation of God, I want to suggest to you, is indicative of the existence of such a person. It might be hard for us to comprehend that such a person might exist, that might affect us personally, that exhibits all of these traits at the same time that utilizes them to further their own agenda and certainly in a way that is destructive to others. What might alarm us even more so is the implication we can derive from verse 19, where it says this man is a false witness who speaks lies and one who sows discord among brethren. And it tells me that even among the holy, sanctified nation of Israel, the people of God, and we could say spiritual Israel today, this person may exist. And I think that we need to be optimistic and positive about the outlook of those among our number, that brethren who are members of the true Israel, of the true church, are those who know Jehovah, those who have come to him through Jesus Christ, who have put off the world and put on Christ and are radically transformed, yet there are pretenders among us. Some don't know they're pretenders. They're hypocrites and they have just been deceived by Satan into thinking they're doing right and really they're wrong. And then there are some that are just flat out evil and they have agendas and they are intentionally manipulating and exploiting what would be good traits among God's people to further their own will. And I want to suggest to you with this that this evil that is very real and exists and could exist and does exist among the people of God is demanding of us. It demands our acknowledgement of it and it demands our interaction with it, even if we would rather ignore it altogether. And we don't want to believe that even some among the people of God might be like this. It demands that we acknowledge that there will be and has been people that could be described the way wisdom describes this worthless and wicked man in Proverbs 6. And while it demands that we acknowledge it, it then demands that we interact with it, that we deal with it, that we oppose it and deal with it in a godly manner, that we avoid being a part of it, that we avoid succumbing to temptation to be involved in any part of these traits at all, but certainly that we see it, acknowledge it, and we oppose it as those who are righteous. And so I want us to do is see the profile of evil, if you will, that the Holy Spirit paints for us in this text in this first hour and then make some applications in the last hour. Let me suggest to you that this is descriptive as a whole of one who is obviously opposed to God, but it uses very graphic language that I think will be helpful for us in seeing what is the nature of a man that God sees is evil and opposed to him. And we think of the worst of the worst in human history, and certainly they can be characterized very vividly by the points in this text, but I think we discount sometimes and minimize just how evil and vicious certain things can be, like sowing discord or lying or just being proud, verse 17. God considers a person that has these traits as a worthless person and a wicked man. The word worthless is the Hebrew word Belial, and that will sound familiar to you. We'll get to that in a moment. But Brown, Driver, and Briggs says that the word means worthlessness, but there's a little more to it than that. It derives from Bali and Yale, meaning a place from which none arises, and thus is a euphemism for Sheol, some scholars believe. Some believe that it comes from a root which means to swallow, and thus should be understood as the swallower. I want to suggest to you that both ideas are involved in this concept and descriptive of a person like this. So turn to chapter 1 of Proverbs for an example of this. Sheol, the place of the grave, the place of the dead that swallows people and takes them and they don't return from there. That's the description of this man. In Proverbs 1 and verse 10, a father is warning his son and he says, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent." Verse 12, "They will tell you, let us swallow them, these innocent people. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol." That's the wicked Belial person. He is the one who is going to swallow people alive like the grave and whole like those who go down to the pit. But it's not just what he does to other people, but it's what he represents within himself. What kind of a life is that? What does it lead to? Verse 18. "They lie in wait for their own blood. They lurk secretly for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. It takes away the life of its owner." So it's descriptive of a life that you don't want to live because it will backfire on you. It's empty and void, but it will consume you like the grave, and you won't come back from it. But also, the people who are living that life are taking people down with them. They're swallowing them whole like Sheol. The same source explains that the word occurs 27 times in the Old Testament And it generally refers to a person who has become so wicked and corrupt that he or she is a detriment to society. The word is used in Deuteronomy chapter 13. I want you to turn over there where Moses, God through him, is warning the generation that will inhabit the promised land of what they should avoid and what consequences would come with it if they did not avoid it. And he says in verse 12 of Deuteronomy 13, if you hear someone in one of your cities, which the Lord your God gives you to dwell in, saying, corrupt men have gone out from among you and enticed the inhabitants of their city, saying, let us go and serve other gods which you have not known. Then you shall inquire, search out, and ask diligently. And if it is indeed true and certain that such an abomination was committed among you, you shall surely strike the inhabitants of that city with the edge of the sword, utterly destroying it, all that is in it, and its livestock with the edge of the sword. That's a wicked man, a corrupt man, a worthless man that is not just self-destructive, but destructive to his community of faith, people of God. In verse 13, the word translated corrupt man or corrupt men is the same word in Proverbs 6 and verse 12 translated worthless, Belial. And it would interest you, I think, it interests me to note the King James Version translation, because the translation is of two Hebrew words, Bain, Belial. And Bain means son of or children of. The King James Version says, not corrupt men, but children of Belial. Or Belial is maybe how you've heard it pronounced. Children of Belial. I want you to notice in 1 Samuel 2 and in verse 12, the example of Eli's sons. Remember, Hophni and Phinehas are priests to the Lord. And they're not good priests. They're very corrupt priests. It says in 1 Samuel 2 and in verse 12, the sons of Eli were corrupt. They did not know the Lord. Now, again, the King James Version says the sons of Eli were sons of Belial. They knew not the Lord. But that was not just self-destructive. I want you to notice what Samuel had observed in verse 24 of the same text. When he confronts them, he says, no, my sons, it is not a good report that I hear. You make the Lord's people transgress. You not only go against the Lord yourself, but you influence others to go with you. You tear down society. You bring reproach upon the people and upon their God. So the worthless person, the one who is a son of Belial, is the one who is opposed to God. That should be 1 Samuel 2 and verse 12. I apologize. The same text. They are sons of Belial who do not know the Lord. It is the man who is opposed to justice. In Proverbs chapter 19 and in verse 28, the New King James Version translates the word disreputable. The King James Version, ungodly. That's Belial. And it is a disreputable witness, a worthless witness, a wicked man, a son or child of Belial. He scorns justice, and the mouth of the wicked devours iniquity. He is opposed to justice. He does not treat his fellow man justly. He is completely unfair. He is completely without compassion. He is a son or child of Belial. Deuteronomy 15 and in verse 9 translates the word into wicked, and it shows that such a man is against his community. Beware lest there be any wicked thought in your heart, saying, the seventh year, the year of release is at hand, and your eye be evil against your poor brother, and you give him nothing, and he cry out to the Lord against you, and it becomes sin among you. And so within Israel, God constructed a system where every seventh year there would be a release of slaves and there would be a release of dead and a kind of a fresh start. And beware lest there be in any of you this wickedness, this idea of belonging to one opposed to God that would withhold that kind of grace and mercy and compassion to the less fortunate, the struggling. It is a person who is opposed to all sense of propriety. You remember Hannah, who is barren, and she's being tormented by her husband's other wife, who is able to have children. And she is moved to such despair that she is crying and weeping and praying to God. And Eli sees her, and he sees that her mouth is moving, but she's not saying anything. And his conclusion is, she's drunk. And this is what Hannah says, "Do not consider your maidservant a wicked woman." That's the word. "For out of the abundance of my complaint and grief, I have spoken until now." The King James Version tells us that she said to Eli, "Count not thy handmaid a daughter of Belial." In 2 Samuel 22 and verse 5, and there it would be characteristic of such a one to be drunk in the middle of the day, to have no sense of propriety or shame. In 2 Samuel 22 and in verse 5, David is singing a song of victory that Jehovah has given him, and he equates Belial, that wickedness, that worthlessness, as synonymous with the opposite of life, against life, opposed to life. He says, "When the waves of death surrounded me, the floods of ungodliness made me afraid." Ungodliness is Belial. And so this is the type of man being described in Proverbs 6. He is against God. He's against justice. He's against his community. Even though he wears a facade of compassion and love and care, he's against all that is proprietous. He's against life itself, which is why such an individual is a step away from murder, as the text shows. And you remember what the Apostle Paul mentioned to the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians when he was trying to get them to break free from the false teachers in their midst. And he says this, "What accord has Christ with Belial," or Belial is how I pronounced it before I understood the correct pronunciation. Belial. Throughout Jewish literature, it became synonymous as a name for the devil or the chief of demons. Proverbs 6 is saying this man who's described in this passage is devilish. He is a worker of Satan. It says a worthless man and a wicked man. The Greek word or the Hebrew word is aven. Halot, the Hebrew Aramaic lexicon of the Old Testament, says that the word means disaster or looming disaster, sin and injustice, deception, nothingness, false or idolatrous cult. The same source that we've been alluding to says that this word occurs, aven, wicked, predominantly in poetic passages and most often has the worshipers of Yahweh as its backdrop, and explaining that the doer of aven, wickedness, seeks to unsettle or even kill any faithful member of the covenant community, especially the less fortunate individuals. I want to direct your attention to the book of Psalms, Psalm 28 first, and I want you to notice Psalm 28 and verse 3. And just a heads up while you're turning there, that should be Psalm 59. Again, a typo of mine. I really need work on that. Psalm 28 and verse 3. David says by inspiration, "Do not take me away with the wicked and with the workers of iniquity." There the word is iniquity. "They speak peace to their neighbors, but evil is in their hearts." He is opposed to his community, trying to unsettle them or even destroy them entirely. This is elaborated on in more detail in Psalm 59, another psalm of David. And before we read those verses, I want you to notice what that description says, that it seeks to unsettle or even kill the faithful member of the covenant. And you remember the time that this psalm is alluding to, the superscription of Psalm 59 says, "It is set to do not destroy a Mitchum of David when Saul sent men and they watched the house in order to kill him." This is the king of Israel sending men to the house of a faithful servant to kill him. This is wickedness. This is aven, And notice the description. Psalm 59, verse 1, deliver me from my enemies, O my God. Defend me from those who rise up against me. Deliver me from the workers of iniquity. There's the word of in. And save me from bloodthirsty men. For look, they lie in wait for my life. The mighty gather against me, not for my transgression nor for my sin, O Lord. They run and prepare themselves through no fault of mine. He's innocent. He's righteous. And he is the victim of Aven. Awake to help me, and behold, verse 5, you therefore, O Lord God of hosts, the God of Israel, awake to punish all the nations. Do not be merciful to any wicked transgressors. That's the word, wicked, Aven. There's something else that is interesting about this word. It appears to derive from the parent root of own, which is power. And consequently, Aven could highlight a negative aspect of power, that is the abuse of power that brings harm and destruction. So in Proverbs 6 and verse 17, a proud look, eyes that are high, he's above other people. He's got something that has gone to his head, made him arrogant, proud in his power, and he uses that position of prominence and ability and strength to oppress those who are beneath him, not help them, not aid them, not protect them, but he abuses his power. He is Aven, he is wicked, to destroy them. It tells us in Proverbs 6 and in verse 16 that these are things that the Lord hates. Capital O-L-O-R-D. Yahweh hates them. The one and only true God, that God that Israel serves, Yahweh hates that kind of behavior. It is entirely opposed to who he is. Exodus 34 in verse 6, he proclaims his name, Yahweh, and what that means, what that represents to Moses. Yahweh passed before him and proclaimed, the Lord, that is Yahweh, the Yahweh God, merciful and gracious, long-suffering and abounding in goodness and truth, keeping mercy for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgression and sin. So he is helpful and gracious, and he lifts up, he erases what is bad, and he promotes what is good. He cares for the less fortunate. He reaches down and condescends to the powerless to aid them in their difficulties and their struggles. And all that is opposed to that, it says, he by no means clears the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children and the children's children to the third and fourth generation. You know, I think that it's interesting to me. You've heard me say it before. I've heard it being said before many times, and I think it's a good sentiment, but we always talk about hating the sin and loving the sinner. But if you just read the Psalms, it tells us that God hates the sinner. I believe that's what that verse is telling us. He is willing to forgive. He wants everyone to go to heaven. But the people who spit at his grace and mercy, you think we can say God loves them? He has done loving things for them. He values and treasures their soul, but they are entirely opposed. They're workers of Satan. The Lord hates such a person who willingly and knowingly goes beyond and above and against everything that God stands for. And this is what he wants his people to be. Micah 6 and verse 8, he has shown you, O man, what is good. What does the Lord require of you? All that God is and all that God wants from us. What does he want from us at the end of the day? To do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. But the worthless man, the wicked man, is the complete opposite, and God hates what he does, and he hates who he is because he's opposed to him, because his heart is set on evil. I want you to notice in Proverbs 6 and verse 12, he walks with a perverse mouth. And then in verse 14, perversity is in his heart. Wherever he goes, his speech is contrary to what is good, to what is true, to what is wholesome. And because his heart is perverse, that's why his speech is perverse. And you notice that he walks with a perverse mouth. He goes about and his mouth is the whole of his life, the character of his life. What he's saying is what he's doing, and he's wreaking havoc everywhere he goes. Proverbs 4 and in verse 23 tells us to keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. This man has pent up perversity in his heart. He has had perverse thoughts. He has had perverse motives. His speech betrays him, as crafty as he tries to be. But all of that leads to action. I want you to notice in Matthew 12, in verse 34, what Jesus says about that kind of heart. When he's telling the Pharisees, either make the tree good and its fruit good, or else make the tree bad and its fruit bad. A tree is known by its fruit. Brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart brings forth evil things. When you have evil in your heart, you can't speak what is right. You can't speak what promotes unity and aids others, but you divide and conquer, you tear down, and it's because perversity is in your heart. But notice what that's indicative of in Matthew 15, what Jesus says. In verse 19, he explains, or verse 18, the things which proceed out of the mouth come from the heart. They defile a man. For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witnesses, blasphemies. And Jesus is saying essentially that words, while we say sometimes, can never hurt me, they actually do. They're seeds that are planted. They're evidence of thoughts. And thoughts become actions. He's saying the reason people murder is because it's in their heart. And they've talked about it. They've expressed hateful and terrible things. James 3 explains that in the heart of worldly wisdom, evil, every evil thing is there. Confusion, opposition to authority. He walks with a perverse mouth. Perversity is in his heart. And therefore, in chapter 6 of Proverbs, in verse 18, he is a heart that devises wicked plans. This shows the extent to which the perversity of the heart can reach. It's not just a mere chance. It's not just a mere weakness within the man, but it's by intent. It's a heart that is trained in perversity, and therefore it's ambitious in perversity. It plans. It thinks. He devises wicked plans. There's the Hebrew word, aven, the root of which has the idea of power and hence the abuse of power. I want you to notice in Psalm 10, that comes out very vividly. The word aven is in verse 7, translated iniquity in the New King James Version. But I want you to follow through with me in this text about that idea of wickedness, this abusiveness of power, this wickedness. Why do you stand afar off, O Lord? Why do you hide in times of trouble? The wicked in his pride persecutes the poor. Let them be caught in the plots which they have devised. So he is prideful and plotting against the less fortunate. Verse 3. The wicked boasts of his heart's desire. He blesses the greedy and renounces the Lord. He is high and lifted against God. The wicked in his proud countenance does not seek God. God is in none of his thoughts. His ways are always prospering. Your judgments are far above and out of his sight. As for all his enemies, he sneers at them. He has said in his heart, I shall not be moved. I shall never be in adversity. His mouth is full of cursing and deceit and oppression. Notice, under his tongue is trouble and iniquity. His mouth is full of oppression. Do words matter? Do words hurt? Are words damaging? That is the first tool of the aven, the wicked. Verse 8, he sits in the lurking places. Notice the intent and the plan. He sits in the lurking places of the villages and the secret places. He murders the innocent. His eyes are secretly fixed on the helpless. He lies in wait secretly as a lion in his den. He lies in wait to catch the poor. He catches the poor when he draws him into his net. He crouches. He lies low that the helpless may fall by his strength. His strength, his power. He's using his power to oppress those who are vulnerable. He has said in his heart, God is forgotten. He hides his face. He will never see. His strength he uses as an occasion to exalt himself, to oppress those who are less fortunate, poor, not just meaning impoverished financially, but poor maybe in health, poor in strength, poor in status and circumstance, those who are lesser in their advantage. He views all of that as opportunity to carry out his evil plans. And so the proverb mentions how he's calculated. in what he does. He's devising evil continually. He's trying to do things that are contrary to the Lord. Continually, from the Hebrew kol et, that is all the time. All the time is literally what it's saying. He devises evil all the time. And his evil is narrowed down to sowing discord among the brethren. You've heard the word antisocial. We throw that around a lot sometimes. I'm antisocial. And usually what we mean by that is I'm uncomfortable around others and I'm more comfortable just by myself, not in company. But there's a more insidious and malevolent idea of antisocial, and that is anti-society, against society, harmful to organized society. There's a man named Diotrephes in 3 John who was antisocial. He forbids John and all the apostles and the brethren who come with truth, and then he casts out anyone who receives them. He's just tearing everything down. And that's what we see in Proverbs chapter 6. The whole body being used for evil. Proverbs 6 and verse 13. He winks with his eyes, shuffles with his feet. He points with his fingers. And elaborating on that in the 17th verse beginning as well. In Proverbs 16 and verse 27. An ungodly man digs up evil, and it is on his lips like a burning fire. A perverse man sows strife, and a whisperer separates the best of friends. A violent man entices his neighbor and leads him in a way that is not good. He's trying to involve others in his evil. That's the winking with the eyes. He's trying to destroy them with his evil. He shuffles with his feet, which is disputed on what that means. But the various ideas is he speaks with his feet. He gives signals with his feet. He scrapes with his feet. But it all is falling in the same comprehensive character of one who intends and purposes to set evil on others and harm them for his own gain. He points with his fingers. When the children of Israel claimed that God did not hear their fast in Isaiah 58, and Isaiah shows that your fast was for selfish reasons, he calls them to promote a true fast, and involved in that true fast is ceasing evil. One of the things he says in Isaiah 58 and verse 9 is, you shall call and the Lord will answer. You shall cry and he will say, here I am. If you take away the yoke from your midst, the pointing of the finger and the speaking wickedness. They must desist from pointing the finger of accusation, of blasphemy and scorn at others, to degrade who they are, to make themselves feel superior, to use that to exploit for their own advantage. That's what the proverb is describing. It goes on to show their calculated evil, and that they're proud in their look. That is literally their eyes are high, exalted against God. Isaiah chapter 2 describes the one who are proud and lofty. And God is going to come down upon everything lifted up, and it shall be brought low. Verse 17, the loftiness of man shall be bowed down, and the haughtiness of men shall be brought low. The Lord alone will be exalted in that day. It is opposed to everything that God is trying to promote in us. And in their pride, they lie. But this is not just a little white lie, even though that's sinful. This is intentional lying as a weapon against other people, against the community. Psalm 120 and in verse 2 uses the same word. Deliver my soul, O Lord, from lying lips and from a deceitful tongue. That's the point. It's not just I'm ashamed of what is the truth, so I'm going to tell a lie. But it's I am wanting to manipulate the masses, and I'm going to spread lies about that person. Verse 19, he's a false witness who speaks lies, sowing discord among the brethren. And it makes sense then that in that same text, verse 17, describes the man as one who sheds innocent blood with his hands. Well, that escalated quickly, but it really didn't, did it? He's exalted against God. If you are exalted against God, you think you're bigger than God. Do you think that you'll be bigger in your mind, more powerful and important to the degradation of others than your fellow man made in the image of God? To the extent that now you're using your words to destroy them, not build them up. There's no sanctity of life in your mind, but you're weaponizing your tongue against them, degrading them, pulling them down. And then Matthew 15, 19 makes sense when Jesus says, out of the heart proceed evil thoughts and murders. This is why threats are illegal and to be taken very seriously. People go to jail for death threats. Someone calls in a bomb threat to a school. You think that if they're caught, they know who that is, they'll just get a slap on the wrist? Even if they never intended to do it, because we take words seriously, and certainly God does. You're killing them with your words. You're killing their reputation. They're killing their life. You're tearing them down. And so it's no wonder that you're a step away from actually taking their life. This is why John, by inspiration in 1 John 3 and verse 15, says, whoever hates his brother is a murderer. And you know that no murderer has eternal life. You know, here's one of the things that I've meditated on, thought on. We have gotten far too involved in politics as members of the church, to the extent that we want to be identified, most of us, with the conservative right, which means I'm not a snowflake, words don't hurt me. Free speech means you ought to just take whatever anyone is willing to call you or say against you. That's not biblical. I believe that if we follow all the social, within our own lives, I'm not saying as a state, but all the social interactive characteristics and laws of God in the New Testament, the moral fiber of Jesus Christ, there are some of our conservative fellows politically that will call us liberal in mind. And I'm okay with that if it means I'm like Christ. The Bible's telling us, even if you live in a land of free speech, you don't get to say what you want. And you'll be condemned if you do. Because in the heart of words are the very actions they seek to communicate. But notice in verse 15, we'll leave on a negative positive note. He says, therefore his calamity shall come suddenly. Suddenly he shall be broken without remedy. Therefore connects his behavior with his end. People who live like that and act like that, they can only get away with it for so long. It will swallow them even in this life, but it certainly will come back to bite them in the judgment. Chapter 1 in verse 17 explains again, surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird. You try to sneak up behind them, not throw it in front of them. Saying what you're doing is completely exposed to the one who's going to judge you ultimately. And then eventually to society, they lie in wait for their own blood. They lurk secretly for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. It takes away the life of its owners. Chapter 1 of Isaiah and verses 21 through 23 describes the evil in Israel during that day. The reason judgment is coming upon them, that the faithful city has become a harlot. They house murderers where righteousness was housed before. It says that your princes, those in power, those should protect you. They're rebellious. They're companions with thieves. And they don't defend the fatherless. They cause the widow, or does the cause of the widow does not come before them. I want you to notice what he goes on to say at the last verse of Isaiah 1. The strong shall be as tinder, and the work of it as a spark. Both will burn together, and no one shall quench them. Jesus said something similar to the weeping women of Jerusalem. And he says, don't weep for me, weep for yourselves, because there's something far worse coming upon this nation. He said, if they do these things in the greenwood, what will be done in the dry? An individual who's completely dried up from all sense of godliness and love and mercy and compassion, he's just readied to be completely engulfed in the flame of his own evil. He'll burn up. If he gets away from it in this life, he'll burn up in judgment. Psalm 1 says that the ungodly are like chaff which the wind drives away. They will not stand in the congregation of the righteous. Psalm 11, David is asked the question, if the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? You know what he said? He said, the Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven. His eyes behold, his eyelids test the sons of men. The Lord tests the righteous, but the wicked and the one who loves violence, his soul hates. Notice that he hates the one, not what he does merely. And upon the wicked, he will rain coals, fire and brimstone, and a burning wind shall be the portion of their cup. For the Lord is righteous. He loves righteousness. His countenance beholds the upright. And so in a time of disorientation, where, again, Saul in his power was abusing David, who was innocent, David rests assured that this will consume him in the end, and it will be eternal forever and ever and ever and ever. We don't want to be about that. We want to rescue people from that. But we also should take solace in the fact that God, our great avenger and our just judge, will right every wrong in the end. I appreciate your kind attention. As I mentioned, we'll continue this study, Lord willing, in the third hour. But before we dismiss to our classes, we'll be led in a word of prayer.